little different than all the rest. I'm quite old fashioned, wear a hat, sometimes play chess. And when I'm out, I'm looking for that vintage fling.
My girlfriend will often be like, well, did you see what Priscilla just posted? Well, you should try what, did you know that Priscilla's working with this person? Priscilla has this great collaboration. You should go check. I'm like, I don't care about this person. I don't want to hear about her anymore. Just like, leave me alone. I don't care what she's doing. And she kept sending me links to your stuff. And I was like, can you just like stop? But then one day I went and like looked and I'm like, oh, she's really cool.
You're like, yeah, I can see it. Yeah.
And now I'm like, did you see that Priscilla? And Joe's like, what? I'm like, she's in Italy. I'm like, yeah, yeah. Did you see? She's like, well, I don't know.
So she lost interest. So she was like,
she didn't lose interest. She's like, she knows that I'm like desperate to move to Italy, and she's like blocking blocking these vibes, but we'll get there. Yeah, so now she's just like, oh yeah, now you care about Priscilla now that she's in Italy. I'm gonna go see her. So
it's just an added bonus.
Yeah,
my coolness factor, according to my 17-year-old son, like significantly went up since I've moved to Italy. He's like, yeah, you were okay before, but now that like you live in Italy, you're a little bit cooler now. A little bit.
It's funny. I don't know if he's there yet, but maybe, because you're saying that he's like evaluating your cool factor. But I have three daughters that are in their 20s. Well, one's 30-ish. And
no.
We've moved into this like place where, so when they're little, like you're the best, most amazing creature on the planet, right? And then they go through this phase where like teachers at school start teaching them stuff. And then they're like, well, mom, you're wrong because my teacher said whatever. And you're like, your teacher's dumb. So it's like, no, I'm just kidding. and then I have all girls. So they then went into like teenage land where then nothing I said was important or cool or meaningful in any way.
It was all about friends, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I had no idea. Mom, you don't understand. I'm like, I'm only 20 years older than you. I'm not 100. Like, really, I don't understand friendships or relationships or dynamic.
You're like, I was born at 20 and then I didn't get to experience any of that.
Never been a teenager ever. Never done anything cool. So cool. That's my favorite. I'm like, I can't wait till you're an adult and you start being embarrassed about the things that you think are so cool right now. But anyway, then they like hit their 20s and they start coming back to me like, mom, what do you think about this, mom? But now, like, I don't know, something weird's going on. There's like this contradicting, like, I need you and I need you to always answer the phone when I call you. You have to be ever available to me and answer all my questions. But then I'm also going to act like you're just kind of cute and adorable and you don't understand real life.
Or they just want to ask you a question in hopes that you're going to give them the answer they want.
Yeah, especially one of them. She'll be like, mom, what should I do about this? And then I'll tell her. And she's like, never mind. I'll just ask someone else.
I'll just call the next person in line.
Maybe someone else will tell me what I want to hear. Anyways. So, Priscilla, welcome.
Things to look forward to.
Yeah, really exciting. But he's a boy. Maybe it'll be different. I don't know.
Oh, no. He's pulled out the whole, you were born before the internet. And so, therefore, like, my childhood does not, like, equate to anything of, like, his reality now, you know, as a teenager. And I'm like, well, you know, kind of. You're right about that, because we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have social media. So we got teased, you know, one day it can be completely forgotten, like the next, you know, whereas now social, it like, it just relives and it like has its own life force, I guess. But yeah, I think he's starting to realize that, you know, I am a young mom like you, I guess, you know, that we had our kids young and like, I'm not so much of like a dinosaur, you know, he's starting to realize that.
I remember my daughter asked me once, did you have phones when you were little? And I'm like,
Fisher-Price ones.
How old do you think I am? And then I was like, yeah, we had phones, not cell phones when I was little, but we had phones. And she's like, oh, okay. And I was like, but you know, we didn't have juice boxes. And she's like, like, I know, it's crazy.
The end of the world.
So Priscilla, for people who are listening, Do you want to just tell us what you do?
Sure. So I am a private chef slash cooking teacher. My mission is to make the kitchen a happy place for people. After 15 years in corporate and visual communication, graphic design, marketing, advertising, I realized that that wasn't my calling. I was really good at it, but wasn't my calling. And the kitchen was always a source of creativity, inspiration, fun for me. And when I realized that it wasn't the case for everyone, I was like, wait a second. Why is it stressful to cook a meal? Like, it didn't compute at first. And so I realized that this was a gift that, like, my grandmother's passed on to me. And I was able to cultivate from a young age. So it was just like through practice. And so I decided, well, I want to make the kitchen a happy place for everyone. So whether that be through an online space or in person or through recipes, an ebook, however I can do it, that's how I want to do it.
So how did you end up shifting from your more office kind of corporate vibe job to actually creating a job where you're cooking?
So this is kind of like the reoccurring theme in my life. I get to a point where I ignore that little voice inside me for so long that like alarm bells start going off. And I have no choice but to listen. So the first time that happened, I was a teenager and grew up pretty religious, like in a very strict family, religious family, and realized that that was not what I wanted. So I basically reinvented myself, left the family dynamic, and like paved my own life, I guess, life path. Second time that happened, I was in a very unhappy marriage with the father of my son, Becker, and it got to a point where it's just, I couldn't ignore it anymore. So I had to do something, reinvented myself, moved out, met Nat, who you know, and just kind of, you know, figured out a new life path, including a career. So worked for about 12 years in corporate once I got divorced. And so while I was in that, again, unhappy, kind of just doing what was expected of me because that's in my nature, please. And, you know, career, you know, goal oriented of like, okay, well, how can I get to the next chapter and how can I, you know, keep on advancing and keep doing good things for either a person or a company or whatnot, realized that I had completely ignored myself. So alarm bells went off. I needed to take some time off because I had completely used up all of my like batteries, basically. Like I had nothing left to give. So I took a 3 months hiatus and
Priscilla, you just, you're like, you burned out.
I totally burned out. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It got to a point where I felt like I had given everything to this company. I had sacrificed my time with my son, my personal life. I was really just focused on, you know, the goals that were set for me in this corporate setting. And I couldn't sleep anymore. I had, you know, crying episodes, which I'm like, I'm not a crier. So like my son was looking, he's like, why are you angry all the time? And I was like, I don't know. So I finally said, okay, I have no choice. I have to take some time to figure out what's going on because like, clearly I can't keep on with this. So I took some time off and quickly realized that like I was finding my joy in the kitchen. So, you know, being able to kind of just start an Instagram page and, you know, share it with people that way, have people over for dinner, start creating recipes. And so it really kind of happened organically and slowly over a 3 month period where I finally realized maybe I can make this a career. Didn't know how. I just had the idea of like, maybe I don't need to be in corporate anymore and I can figure out something different for my life where I have more, I don't know how I can put it, like something that's more fulfilling. Let's put it that way. So it wasn't like this aha moment of like, oh yeah, I'm going to start cooking and this is going to work out for me. It was really like over time, taking it a little bit, you know, day by day. seeing more and more, okay, like, how can I make this a career? So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
I remember, I don't know who you were working for. I just remember back a long time ago when my girlfriend was stalking you. I think she was really just trying to inspire me, but I was just like, stop talking about this woman. I was asking her, but what's her job? And she was like, I don't know. I think she works for a toy company or something. I don't know what she does. But like, and then after a while, she was like, she's not anymore. She's just cooking. You see, Jen? Like, and I was like, but how?
Yeah, it was, I invented my own job, basically.
Did you start by cooking for other people or teaching people?
It was kind of both. So like, I called myself a food coach at first, and everyone thought that meant nutritionist. And really, even though I had a background in that, and like my grandmother was a, you know, holistic nutritionist, I didn't feel like that was my life's purpose of just getting people healthy. I really wanted to make the kitchen a fun place, regardless of, you know, if you're a vegan, if you have, you know, certain intolerances, if you want a healthy lifestyle, or you want to just eat really good food. Like, I, no matter what your background, I just wanted it to be a fun activity. And so I started by doing these one-on-one sessions with friends and family and people that were referring me, like, oh, she really can teach you some fun, you know, recipes to kind of inspire you and get you going in the kitchen. And then it became, well, can you just cook that for me? And at first I was like, no.
You're supposed to be enjoying it yourself, not just eating it.
Exactly. But I mean, I also have this, you know, philosophy of you never know where one opportunity is going to bring you, right? So I had through my corporate, you know, contacts and all of that, they're like, well, we would love for you to do kind of like a cooking or a like teaching and cooking event for us during holidays. And so you can get people involved. And so it was like a workshop of sorts / catering gig.
Yeah.
Because basically I was still kind of cooking for them, right? So it started off with like 8 people, and then it became 12 people, and then it was like 25 people. And I was like, whoa. So I did all of that in that first like few months of leaving corporate. And I was like, well, I just got to go for this. If people want to do this, you know, as a group activity, like there's got to be interest in this, like on one-on-one. So I started, you know, with Instagram, you know, posting some really fun facts on different ingredients, or, you know, inspiring recipes of how to use seasonal produce, and then slowly built up a clientele where I was able to basically mentor and like coach people through a longer period of time. So instead of doing a one-off class, I worked with clients over like 3 to 6 months and really helped them elevate their cooking experiences. Cool.
Amazing. I always think I'm so open-minded and I understand how everybody's just so different. And then I realize that I'm not at all, but or not that I'm not at all, but not to the extent that I thought. And I was working with a coach for a while who actually really helped me through a period similar to what you were describing before, where you were just like, I don't know what I want to be doing, but it's not this. And, she's amazing. Her name's Delaney Fisher. She's been on our podcast before. And now I'm going to out her, but she hates cooking. And so we were talking because she asked me, well, what is this website that you have with all this food stuff? You never talk about this. Like, what is that? So then I ended up realizing like I had this whole passion on the side that I was putting all this energy into, but not exploiting in any way or like nurturing in any way. So that really helped me to shift into like what I'm doing now. But the funny thing is when I was talking to her about it, she was curious only as far as a coach would be curious, but like would like wasn't really present for my over exuberant passion for the food part, the cooking and the shopping and everything. And she was just like, oh my God, going in a grocery store, it's like my worst nightmare. I can't stand it. Like all her meals are either takeout or like a meal prep service that her husband mostly would prepare, like, and I could not. I was just like, I don't understand. Like, but what do you mean you hate cooking? I don't understand what you're saying. And she was just like, oh, so stressful, so boring, so annoying. And I'm like, but it's food. It's food though. Like, and she was just like, no. And I don't even like going grocery shopping with my partner because she's very practical. And it's like, hey, what do we need? And I'm like, well, you know, like Milano, the Italian grocery store. And yeah, hours. I can be in there for hours. Yes. Hours. There's so many different kinds of olives. Like there's so many different kinds of pickled vegetables. Like there's so much stuff in there. And my girlfriend's like, hey, do you have everything you need? I'm like, go. I need everything in this store. Not that I'm going to buy every single, I would if I could, honestly. But, or if you go to like Atwater Market or Jean Talon Market, leave me there for hours. I'm in heaven. But yeah, so I just remember like realizing that there's people out there who really not only don't care about it, but feel extremely stressed by it and oppressed by the fact that they have to like plan their next meal. And then there's people who just are like obsessed with food. And then there's all these people in the middle. Like, I know, Megan, you're not, you say you don't like super love planning dinners and cooking dinners and stuff like that, but then you're always making these really cute like cookies and desserts and like you cook things and you have like that. Well, Megan's also a historical fiction writer. So something that's really cool, I find like Megan will pull up old recipes or like get into a book that has recipes in it because it like there's a history to that. Mm-hmm. Megan, you can interrupt me and tell me I'm full of shit if I'm lying.
I don't know. Or it's like the time, well, COVID, I mean, that was, I mean, that's where I ended up with, you know, larger size pants, because one of the things that I decided to do was try to find the best oatmeal cookies recipe. And so I went through like both grandparent, like my grandmother's cookbooks that I had, and then I ended up with my, I think it was like my great grandmother's recipe. It was the last one and it was the best one. And I was like, but I enjoy like,
nice,
you know, I don't like meal planning per se. And I mean, we do the whole HelloFresh and, you know, meal kit things. But I prefer, you know, like if I know that someone's birthday is coming up, and then I'll start preparing in my mind what I want to make. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm just craving something, then I'm just like, yeah, why not? Or, you know, you're going through Pinterest and you're like, half hour? I think I got half hour. Let me see if I got.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting too, because, well, on sweet, like on my vegan website or social media, people will message me like, oh, have you, I don't know, have you ever tried making whatever out of, or my own children, my daughter today sent me, can you please make a cheese out of lupini beans? Can you just invent that, please? Thank you. Have a good day. But then there's other people who are like, I have 5 ingredient recipes. And they're like, this is too complicated. Like, can you give me a more simplified version of this? So there's like people in every realm of this. But I love, Priscilla, that you were coming from a place of like trying to make this a pleasant and fun experience for people so that they don't feel daunted by it. I have a colleague who eats the exact same breakfast, lunch, and dinner every single day.
That would kill my soul.
Right?
He doesn't
care.
Yeah,
I've met a lot of, I've met a lot of these kinds of people. And I found that usually it's because it's the fear of the unknown, right? So like in your job, you know, when you know how to do your job effectively, you feel confident. And so you're just like, I got this. But when you're constantly, you know, either getting new mandates or like you're in this like constant state of like not knowing what to do, then zero confidence. It's just like, I need it to be simple. I need to get it done. I don't want to think about it. It's mm-hmm. a stress, right? And so that's why I guess my approach is, well, let's make it fun, because when it's fun, you build confidence. And confidence allows you to build like a better relationship with cooking, with food, instead of it being like, let's get it done. Like your partner, when, you know, they go do groceries, it's like, let's just get this done because I want it mm-hmm. off of my to-do list. It becomes more of a like, oh, did you see what is in season, what they have in the grocery store? It becomes like a talking point, like an inspiration, like creativity. Mm-hmm. Like at the base, we all have that creativity gene. It's just some of us don't know how to go and get it. So that's my job, is to go and like inspire through creativity.
I would love to just like follow you into a brand new store and just watch you just getting all excited and like just see the wheels turning. And I'd be like, where are we going with this?
This is like Christmas for me any time of year. Like in a new store, I'm just like, ooh, 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 like a little ADHD and like don't know where to look, don't know where to go because I'm just like, oh, like sensory overload is just, it's hilarious. But essentially that's what I do now is I guide people through the markets here in Sicily. And it's like the best job ever. I get to guide people.
That's a really good idea.
Well, yeah, because I think, especially for me, like I spent time traveling in Sicily. I spent time traveling in Morocco. I stayed near the souks. And I was just, even for me, somebody who loves doing this was completely overwhelmed. I was like, there's just so much to see, so much new stuff. Like, I don't even know how to navigate this. So it took some time for me to kind of, you know, figure it out. And then I said, well, other people who are traveling here must feel the same thing as me. You know, if I consider myself an expert and I was overwhelmed, I'm like, I can just imagine how other people would be overwhelmed. And so it's like the funnest part of my job now is I get to navigate and get people excited and like educate them a little bit about the produce to a point where not it's like, oh, facts that they're never going to compute or use in their real life. It's like really like, oh, that's where that comes from. And like, oh, I could use that at home now that I see that. Okay, I'm going to use it and I'm going to incorporate it into my everyday because I know what to do with it now.
My daughter is living in Calabria and her boyfriend is Calabrian. What was interesting is that here in Montreal, he just eats what's here. It's Montreal. It's like a cosmopolitan city. Most of our food is, you know, imported and whatever in a typical grocery store and a lot of the markets even. But what's funny is now that they're in Italy where he grew up, she went to grab a zucchini off the cart and he was like, what are you doing? And she was like, well, I'm buying zucchini. And he was like, why are you buying that? That's not in season. That's not even from here. Why would you buy that? And she was like, okay. And he's like, don't do that.
I'm craving zucchini or need it for a recipe.
Yeah, but the funny thing is like he's like, don't buy, like you don't know what's on there, you don't know if there's pesticides, you don't know where it came from, like because there that you don't, there's not pesticides on all the produce and everything, so don't buy something from somewhere else, like buy the quality stuff that's local and in season. When he's in Montreal, he just walks into a grocery store and buys whatever. But when he's back home, he's like, why would you buy a zucchini when it's not August?
For two reasons. One, because you don't know where it's from. But two, like Italian mentality is you don't overpay for anything. And if it's not in season and it's imported, it's way overpriced. So you don't get it.
And I mean, that's probably a really good thing too. If you have tourists coming in and you want to show them around the market, it's kind of like, okay, so this is what's in season. So if you want, you know, because the first time that we went to Japan, we went through like one of the bazillion markets and my husband picks up an apple, buys it and bites into it. And I said, I hope that's a really good apple. And he said, yeah. I said, because it just cost you $7. And he's like, oh shit. We had like, you know, just off the plane and everything. And he wasn't, you know, we basically just moved the decimal to figure it out. But in his head, he's just like, okay. And then that was like a very good.
I did the same thing in Tokyo. I bought a $9 pear and I was too embarrassed to be like, whoa, wait, no, I don't want this. I was just like, okay, thank you. No lunch for me today.
We've all been there.
I'm just wondering how you feel, Priscilla, about people, because I know two people who do not enjoy eating. They don't care. You know, it's one of my husband's friends. He only eats because he knows he has to, where it's just like, I need to function. But if not, you know, and he's always just drinking shakes and everything, but nothing is ever, we never go there for supper. Let's just sit. And then I worked with a girl and like Jen was saying, just a friend that it was, you know, breakfast, lunch, supper. It was always the same. Like her lunch was packed always the same. And I, you know, I forget how it came up. And she's like, I just don't enjoy, like, I just don't care. And I'm like, you don't get any cravings? And she's like, no. I'm like, you never crave chocolate or something extra salty when you're, you know, PMSing. And she's like, no. And I'm just, it just blows my mind. Like how someone just doesn't, you know, go to a restaurant and, you know, bite into something and be like, yes, yes, that's exactly what I needed.
There are people like that. And I do have met a couple like that, that were not a couple, like they were together, but like a few people that were like that. And I, it for sure, it like, it's my mind boggling to me because I'm like, I love to cook and I love to eat. It's like one of the best pleasures in life, in my opinion, is like not just eating, but like, I think sharing that meal with somebody specifically, if you can share something that you've made with somebody else, like that's a love language, mm-hmm. you know, for me, especially that's how I show I really like you, is if I invite you over for dinner. If you've never come over for dinner, ask questions. But so I actually managed to convert one of these people. It's like one of my like proudest moments. So somebody who used to tell me if they could just invent a pill so that I could just get all of my nutrition that way and never eat, I would be happy with that. And it really, I think, has a lot to do with, you know, your association, especially when you're a kid, with food. And so for this person, I managed to turn it around because they're recently divorced and they wanted to spend more time with their kids. And so I use mealtime, like preparing the food, all of that, as an activity to do with the kids who were, you know, starting to become teenagers, and they were pretty much becoming self-sufficient, but it was a way to kind of bring people together. And it was through that repetition of wanting to, you know, have that family time and like taking, you know, half an hour to an hour, you know, 2 to 3 times a week to create a meal with the kids, that it became a pleasurable thing. So it's like you teach your brain to associate creating the meal and then enjoying the meal as something very pleasurable. So I don't know if that's the case for everyone, but there's definitely people who have no enjoyment through food. I think it's something that can change, though, if they wanted to.
You're like, I'm up for the challenge. Challenge accepted.
But I think that that's also true of people who never cook and don't do a lot of exploring or experimenting. That, I don't know, maybe it's just the naturopath in me, but I just feel like if you don't have that connection with what, like when I'm cooking food, I feel like mm-hmm. I'm doing something so nice for myself. And I think about, not in a annoying, like, this has vitamin C in it, or this will build stronger bones, but kind of like I'm nourishing myself, and whether it's like a salad or a soup or a pasta, it's not about the specific nutrient in it. It's just about like, I'm giving this gift to myself and I feel connected with it. And then also like anyone who's grown a tomato themselves and then eaten it, like, how does that tomato just taste so much better than the one you got at the grocery store? Mm-hmm. Probably it doesn't. It might, if you have like perfect conditions in your yard. I live in Montreal in the city, so they don't really taste very good. But the thing is, like, that connection with the food that you're eating, I think, makes a big difference. And I think a lot of people are so disconnected from what they're eating and where it came from, no matter what that food is. They just went to the grocery cart. It was wrapped in like cellophane or styrofoam or whatever. They chucked it in their cart. They bought it. They went home. They cooked it. They ate it. They didn't care. And I think that, like you said, you created like sort of this connecting, this activity with the kids and the parent, and that made the food obviously taste better. This is something they created together, and there's an association there as well, which is really cool.
But you're right. There are several studies on like preparing the food. Not only is it like emotionally better for you, it's mm-hmm. physically better for you too, because when you present it with a plate that's already, you know, ready to consume, your brain doesn't have time to tell the rest of your body, hey, like, get ready to receive this food that you're about to scarf down, especially if people find it like really appetizing. Like, you know, come back to Montreal, let's say I have one poutine a year. It's like so delicious. It's greasy. It's, you know, all of this. And I just scarf it down. For sure, you feel like, ugh, bloated or you don't feel well after. Whereas if I were to make the poutine from scratch, I would be preparing my body to receive that. I would probably not overeat. And two, I would appreciate it so much more. So it would taste better.
So you had mentioned earlier about that you were in a relationship with someone, you had a son, that marriage dissolved. And I know that you have written about this before, about how hard, and I can relate so much to having kids of my own and having been a single parent for quite some time, that you became habituated to put your needs on the back burner, or even to not connect with what those needs might actually be. So, like, I think often as single parents and any parents, we do things we like, or we think we're supposed to like, or our near people like, or whatever, but we don't actually spend a lot of time stopping and going like, what is it I really need in my life? What am I missing? So for many years, you were that like autopilot mom. And at what point did you actually stop and ask yourself, like, what do I really want?
So again, the thematic of like needing the alarm bells to go off before doing anything about that, that was not a question that I felt I had the luxury to ask myself until last year, last summer. So I was in my second relationship. We weren't officially married, but we, you know, built a house together. We were living together. We went through COVID together. Pandemic, you know, so basically married, and realized that again, I had, you know, between putting all of my efforts towards my son, my new business, and this new relationship, I wasn't even on the list of like priorities anymore. And so when that relationship was dissolving, I was like, okay, do I just truck along and like go back to like being single mom and like, you know, doing what needed to be done? And it was my son who, like, Edgar's so wise beyond his years. He was just like, Mom, this is your time to do you. You had me so young. You're turning 40. Like, why don't you do something that you want to do? And I was going to Italy with a girlfriend. I decided to extend my holiday and I came to Sicily for the first time. And it was here that I kind of started asking that question of like, wait a second, this is the first time in my adult life that I don't have a spouse or a child to like take care of. Like, I can just focus on me. What do I want? What do I want out of this life? What do I want to do? What do I want to eat for dinner? Like the most basic of questions, you know, like, do I even feel like having dinner tonight? Or do I just want to have a glass of wine? Like, you know, like just these things that I had never bothered to ask myself because it was always what everyone else needed in my life. And so that week was pretty pivotal because I came back to Montreal. I packed up all of my belongings and left on with a carry-on and traveled for 4.5 months.
That was the solo trip, the 4.5 month one?
Yeah.
So were you still in your relationship
we had agreed that it was over. And that was what I was evaluating before I left for Italy is, do I like, you know, move out, find a new apartment? Do I buy a house? Like, what do I do? Like, how do I start my life over? And so for the first time, instead of doing the responsible thing of like, okay, I'm going to move all my stuff out, I'll, you know, buy a house or rent a new apartment or whatever, I said, you know what, I'm putting everything in storage and I'm just leaving. I'm going to figure this out. It's a problem for another day. Because I had my son's blessing and I was like, time to do me, as he said. I had never had the opportunity to really travel. I don't know if you can relate, Jen, but like as a young mom, like I didn't really have opportunities to travel other than for business or with my husband. So like solo travel was a totally new concept for me of, you know, 3-4 days here and there, fine. I had done that before, but never like extended period of just going off on my own.
No, never. I've gone if I had a show or I was in a festival or something, go there, perform. It's still, yeah, it's fun, but you're still like, you have like an agenda and you have to care what other people need from you and want from you. And you're not just like, you don't get to just wake up and be like, I can just do whatever I want today and not care. And I think that's relatable for for a lot of people, whether it's your career, your marriage, if you have kids, like how small a thing it is, or no, it's huge, how small it sounds, but how huge it is to just have a whole day, just one day, where you don't have to care what anyone else needs or wants or feels or thinks or any like that. It's crazy how hard it is to have
it, and then when you have it, to be good in that, because it took, I would say, almost 2 months to deprogram my brain, because I was still thinking about, you know, oh, well, what's expected of me then? Like, if I don't have to think of anybody else, what would other people, you know, think I should do with my time, or how I should spend my day, or like, you know. So I built up all of these, like, I was like, I'm going to vlog my entire trip, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to be active. And like the universe literally told me, girl, this isn't about that. Because literally everywhere I went, either my SIM card wouldn't work, so my phone essentially wouldn't work, or the Wi-Fi just never, ever, like my computer never connected. And I was like, well, I guess that's not what I'm meant to be doing right now. So it took like 2 months out of the 4.5 months for me to be just like, okay, I'm letting the universe dictate what I need to be doing here. So I don't know if you can relate, Megan. Have you ever taken a solo trip?
No, I mean, like Jen said, it's either, you know, a festival weekend away, or, you know, with girlfriends, but never on my own. Yeah.
Or your husband.
Yeah, that guy.
Remember that guy?
I kind of like to tag along.
He's kind of cute. So, but yeah, because even when I went to a dance competition in Ottawa and I didn't know anybody, I still stayed with a friend. So it wasn't, but it was scary, you know, driving up by myself, going into a competition where I didn't know a soul, you know, and you see everybody kind of grouped together that they know each other. So at least I had that, you know, I could go home to my friend's house, you know, and kind of like, okay, I'm safe, I'm fine, you know. But yeah, I've never done a solo trip.
I highly recommend it. Yeah. You don't need to be in like divorce mode or like midlife crisis to do it. I really, now that I've done it and I can like really attest to what it's brought me, I'm just like, if you have an opportunity, it doesn't need to be for 4.5 months, but if you can take like even just 4 or 5 days alone, and you figure out that you are an amazing person. Because when you get to spend time with yourself,
right,
and figure out what you like to want to do, all of that, and then you're going to be inevitably faced with some situations where, you know, instead of relying like me, honey, I need this, or help me with the bags, or, you know, like, you know, delegating and like getting the support and the help, you're like, well, I've got like 150 stairs to get to this Airbnb and my luggage, and nobody's going to help me, so I got to figure this one out on my own, you know? Yeah. So you get yourself into these situations where you're like, okay, I can do it. I don't need anyone's help.
Also, if you're a caregiver or like a people pleaser at all, like all it takes is someone else to say like, well, shouldn't we do this other thing instead, for you to like derail what you had in mind and go like, all right, sure, I guess we'll go to the like corpse museum. That sounds fun. Like
that escalated really quickly.
I'd probably like that, but it doesn't matter. The thing is like, whatever you have in mind, like, oh, this would be a nice way to spend. I don't know. Like when I travel, I like to just exist. It's not that I don't want to go to museums or art galleries. The touristy stuff appeals to me less than like when I was in Paris, I just really wanted to sit in a cafe and just like listen and watch people and just drink a coffee. Like these things are very exciting to me. Like just what would it feel like to live here? What would it feel like to just exist here is like really fun for me. But if you're a people pleaser, you're probably immediately going to be like, okay, we'll go do that instead. Cause you're right. Like just sitting in a cafe for 3 hours is dumb.
No.
Or like I can do that anywhere or whatever, but like you can't. Cause like that's when you're in Barcelona is now.
Exactly. And to loop this back to like creativity, you know, like how often do we sit in like boredom? We don't do that anymore. we're constantly overstimulated, or like when we're with friends, like you said, we want to people please. And so we got this list of things that we constantly, okay, we're in Barcelona and we have all of this to accomplish before we leave. But it's when you're sitting at that cafe for 3 hours, like you said, oh, this is so stupid, I should be doing something else. That's maybe where you're going to get that like genius idea, revelation on what you need to be doing with your life, or, oh, you understand yourself better.
Like never going home.
But yeah, exactly.
Okay. So when you were going on your solo trip, I think you had said that you were supposed to go to Miami or something. What happened?
Again, like spur of the moment. Like I came back from Sicily. I was home for 3 weeks. On the fifth day of being home, I decided, okay, I'm leaving. So I packed all my stuff. And a girlfriend of mine was also going through a divorce and she lives in Miami. And she's like, why don't you come and stay with me for a bit and then head off on your adventure? And I was like, that's a great idea. We've been childhood friends since we're like 7 years old. And yet, like our entire adult lives, we haven't had that opportunity to just have like girl time. It was always like the husbands or the kids or like, you know, like something happening. And for the first time, we would both be single and like just enjoying that. So I said, perfect. But again, the universe had a totally different agenda. So I guess it was really about me being on my own, like right from the get-go, because that plan, that trip to Miami actually got canceled because of a hurricane. And so I'm completely packed. I have my carry-on ready to go. And I'm basically like, I've said my goodbyes, my phone's canceled. Like, like, what do I do? So it was like, okay, looking through like flights, like where could I go? Like where in the world can I go? I had made some reservations for basically in 12 days in Spain, Barcelona. So funny mm-hmm. that you mentioned that. I was heading to Barcelona. Yeah. And so I said, well, I have these 12 days. Like, what do I do? Do I just stay in Montreal? Do I go? Like, what do I do? So I see a flight for in like 4 or 5 hours to Rome. And I'm like, well, Italy's calling me. So guess what? I'm going to hop a plane because my bags are packed and I'm ready to go. the Chantal Caveat 6 months. But so I'm basically on the plane to Rome without any bookings for like 10 days. And I'm just like, what am I going to do with myself until I need to be in Barcelona? Like, this is like so destabilizing. Like all the plans I had, the time that I was supposed to be with a friend, I'm all of a sudden on my own. And it was like a wave of panic that like came over me because I like to plan. Like, even though I go with the flow, I need some sort of like
a roof over your head maybe for that night.
Yeah. So it was a little like, okay, like, let's figure this out. So I was in Rome and I felt like, well, if I'm going to be doing this, I don't want to be a tourist. Like you said, I want to be in the cafes. I want to feel like I'm part of the culture. If I'm going to get anything out of this, like just seeing the sights is not how I'm going to do it. And so as I was looking at like where to next, do I rent a car? Do I drive? Do I fly? Something was calling me to come back to Sicily again. And so the next day I flew out, I had a car booked, a little B&B that was like super quaint outside of the city this time. And I said, I'm going to just discover a whole other side of Sicily than what I had first like discovered 3 weeks prior. It was the best thing I did. I was like secluded on a mountaintop. There was no Wi-Fi. I had a car and I had to learn how to drive in Sicily because it's its own kind of thing here. And I got to visit, you know, how people really live here. Got invited out for dinners and lunches and I learned how to make homemade pasta the Sicilian way and went and drank wine in wineries and, you know, visited farms and learned about olive oil. And I was just like, oh my God, this is the best place ever. So I stayed on the western part of Sicily, which a little town called Alcamo, and it's between Palermo and Trapani. And so it's really on the westernmost part of Sicily. It's beautiful, like every night sunsets that are just like to die for and very quiet. It's not a big mm-hmm. metropolitan city like Palermo. And at this point it was mid-September. So, it, you know, lower season, it wasn't so much of a There weren't any tourists. I was the only English speaking person. And in Sicily, most people don't speak English. So I was surrounded by Italians and living the Italian way of life. So it was really, it was a good way to kind of like get my bearings and kind of figure out my groove as a solo traveler. Let's just put it that way.
Did you go there knowing like basic Italian, or so that was like another thing on top of like, what have I done? Where am I going? I hope I'm going somewhere that
people
will speak English, or at least be patient enough with me as I point to stuff.
So it was kind of like this, like, ignorance is bliss. I just figured, I guess because of having the cooking background and like when you cook for people, there's always some sort of like common denominator. Even if you don't speak the language, it's like, you know, I took a class with Anona that like she didn't speak a lick of English and we still like found a way to communicate, and I didn't speak any Italian other than like grazie and like perfetto. It was like the two words that I would be like, okay, I can get it by. I talk with my hands though, so I think that helps. I guess I was just like, ignorance is bliss, because I wasn't thinking about that. And it was really only in Spain that I started feeling like, ooh, I can't communicate and I feel really alone.
Okay.
Because of the culture being so different. In Sicily, it's very warm.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though you can't communicate or you have a harder time communicating, there's this like warmth of like, I want to share my culture. I want to share my food. I want to share this experience with you. So we'll figure it out. Whereas what I felt when I arrived in Spain, and it was like from the first day, was like, oh, you don't speak Spanish, the Andalusian Spanish, so I don't want anything to do with you. And I just felt like an outcast, because I'm like, what was I thinking? Spending a month in Spain, not knowing any Spanish. Like, clearly this was a mistake.
Probably your timing also, like the political climate for the last few years has been pretty tense there too. So it's not like probably the warmest feeling there.
It depended on the city, but yeah, a lot of the coastal villages, like I loved Valencia, and I spent more time in Sevilla because I felt that it was warmer. Also, I realized I'm much more of a Southern European girl than Northern European girl. And I think that like rule of the more south you go, the warmer the people. I'm like, yeah, I can attest to that.
So you realize that that's where you wanted to be for at least for this chapter of your life. And I know that what you're doing now is that you're teaching cooking, and not just teaching cooking, but like you're offering an experience, which is really, really cool. I shouldn't describe it. You should, Priscilla.
So after I was done with my travels, and through my travels, I had discovered like all of these different experiences were a great way to understand a culture better. And so I took a lot of experiences while I was traveling for the 4 months or so. And so when I came back to Sicily, so I finished my 4 months in Sicily, I had my best friend come visit me, my son come visit me, and everyone was just like a renowned, like, what, you're crazy if you come back to Canada, like find a way to stay here. Like, can you make a living? Can you live here? Like, is it even possible? So I did some research while I was here living in Palermo for a month and a half. And I realized that my skill set of working in corporate and marketing and visual communication, also with cooking and teaching and all of that, basically was the perfect opportunity to basically create my job here. And so what I decided to do is, since I want to be an advocate for Sicily, for Italy, but for Sicily, I'm basically creating an experience for people who are traveling here to understand the culture better through the food. And so we go through the markets. I explain a little bit of what's in season, the history behind why the outdoor markets are so important in Sicily, and in all of Italy, but specifically in Sicily. We choose out some ingredients and we create a seasonal dish that the locals would make. And so I like to kind of, since I was fortunate enough to travel all over Sicily, I like to kind of pull recipes from all the corners. And then I put my little Canadian spin on it, which means I simplify or create a version of a traditional recipe that I feel like travelers would want to recreate at home. So Sicily is blessed with such amazing ingredients. Like you're talking about tomatoes, like you don't get the same tomatoes in Montreal as you do in Palermo. Like it's just unfortunate, but that's how it is. So what can we do with those tomatoes in a way that you would love to cook in Montreal with tomatoes? So that's kind of my mindset, is to, again, bring the fun back in the kitchen and take what you learn here and bring it home so that you can, you know, cook these amazing recipes at home
and
as well.
And being a Canadian too, you know what we can get. So it's not like, here's a great recipe, you know, they enjoy it and then they get home and go, okay, I can't even get half these ingredients. You know, I'll have to go to a specialty store that's, you know, a 40-minute drive. You know, if you're creating stuff where it's like, yeah, we have that at the grocery store, I can go grab that and recreate it. I think that's...
Especially now with inflation, like ingredients are so expensive. So if it's something that's imported, and like you said, you have to drive 40 minutes, it's an expensive ingredient. Like, obviously, my goal is to make it more accessible. So like, what can you swap out a traditional Sicilian ingredient for something that's more affordable, more accessible in Canada, the US, or anywhere else in Europe, basically? So that's kind of my approach to it. So if you're like a purist and you're like, oh, is that 100% authentic Sicilian? I think the essence, the ingredients, and like the history behind it is definitely Sicilian. And then I kind of do my little magic in the kitchen to make it accessible to everyone.
Did I understand correctly on your website that you're doing this in collaboration with Airbnb, or it's how does it
so
work? Like the booking,
the experience that we're talking about, like the market tour and the cooking class, that's a unique experience through Airbnb. And so I'm listed. So the only way you can book that experience is through Airbnb, basically. And then I have different experiences that you can also book directly through my website that are slightly different.
Like what?
Like which, give a list to Jen so she can write them all down and then figure out which one she puts first.
So one thing that I wanted to include in my market tour, but I realized as I was kind of, you know, testing out and like piloting what I was doing with Airbnb, was that even though I want everyone to taste everything that's delicious in the market, I would fill them up and then we'd go and cook and they'd be like, I have no space to actually eat what I just cooked. So I offer an earlier tour. So before I would meet people for the Airbnb experience of market tour slash cooking class, is we go through the market and I basically, instead of just focusing on what to buy in the market, is I give them tips and tricks of which is a great vendor for, let's say, arancina, which is those beautiful rice balls that Sicily is known for. I explain some of the street food because Palermo is known as the street food capital of the world. And so I give them basically tips and tricks and we taste little things here and there, including, you know, which churches to go visit. So Palermo has like an insane amount of beautiful churches, something like over 800 in the city center, which like you could never visit all of them, you know? And so which ones that I visited, which ones I feel are worth taking the time to go admire. And there's like four churches right in Capel Market where we give the tour. So it's like, well, which ones, if you needed to choose or, you know, stuff like that. And then, so that's one hour tour. So that's like, it's its own thing. You get to taste things, you get to kind of know, make notes of if you want to come back later and eat a bunch of street food, stuff like that, you have that down for later. And then in the evenings, I give an option of basically it's an elevated cooking experience. So I'll have done the groceries ahead of time because the markets close in the early afternoons. So that's like its own thing. So I would have everything prepared. And then we would do four courses of traditional Sicilian with Canadian twist on it. And also make it kind of like a wine experience as well. So I've managed to create some beautiful partnerships with some local wineries around Sicily, family-owned wineries that, you know, really have passion. And so it's an elevated experience because I really do like a more profound like wine pairing with the different courses. So you get to try potentially four to five different wines, including maybe a Marsala wine. And so it's an evening thing. So you spend an evening and then you're ready to roll home.
Literally roll home. And then how for people, if there are, you mentioned earlier, like if somebody's like gluten free or if they're vegan or if they have other, like, are you pretty adaptable for people who have, I can't imagine my grandmother's Sicilian, may she rest in peace and all that good stuff. But she had celiac and I was like, how can you be Italian and not be able to eat pasta? This is like, I can't. but if that were the case, like, are you able to adapt to people's, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah. Because I think food should be enjoyed. Obviously, nobody should be suffering for food. So yeah, I get requests all the time. Like this week I had somebody who was insulin resistant and couldn't have anything sugar based. So just making sure that we had as clean of a menu as possible with no sugar added. We did for dessert, we still managed to do something that was a treat and sweet, but we used kumquats, what they call kiwi, not kiwi, khaki here. And so we used the ripe kumquats with a little bit of cocoa, unsweetened cocoa, and created a beautiful like chocolate pudding esque dessert, which was like absolutely delicious and a sweet finish to the meal. And so, yeah, if there's, you know, gluten-free or, you know, some people, they don't eat meat or there's, you know, all kinds of dietary restrictions. So I accommodate whenever I can.
Cool. So I'm definitely coming to see you and cook with you. Yeah. I'm dying to do it. In the meantime, you have an ebook for sale right now, A Seat at My Sicilian Table. And tonight I'm going to try and make the pasta con pesto di piatti, but I don't know what the cheeses that you recommended, I don't know what they actually taste like or what the texture is. So I don't know what to replace that with, like, in the vegan world. So what kind of cheese is that?
So think like Parmesan, so dry cheese.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's easy. Easy.
It's, so right, the cheese cool. In that recipe that you're talking about, so this is a pistachio pesto. It's to add a little bit of salt because you'll notice that we don't really add all that much salt in the pesto. Mm-hmm. And so it's the whole philosophy with Sicilian cuisine is that all the ingredients in the recipe need to have a function and play a role to balance, to create balance and harmony in the recipe. So if there's basil, it shouldn't be the primary ingredient. You want to taste the pistachio. You want to taste everything else that's in there. And so by adding cheese at the end, if you don't want to add cheese, don't just add a little sprinkle of flake salt in the pesto. It's like a cheese-free pesto to begin with. So yeah. It's vegan at the base. No eggs in the pasta either.
Oh yeah, I didn't even look.
Well, I actually didn't give you the recipe in the book for that. Yeah, that's going to be a workshop. I'm hoping to launch that in January. I'd love to do an online Sicilian pasta workshop where we can make your homemade pasta from scratch.
Yeah. I ask you a question that's not fair and I could never answer it. So I don't know why I'm asking you, but like, is there a dish in particular that you love, like above all, this is like your go-to that you love making?
Oh my goodness. It's like asking which one is your favorite child? Like,
oh, I know which one of my children is my favorite.
as long as it's in season. So like fresh ingredients are key. Anything that's like, you know, I don't know, like out of season, like I just stay away from, like, I don't like that. But yeah, pasta has been, my son kind of got me into it. I was never a big pasta person. We didn't eat pasta at home growing up all that often. Maybe once in a while, my mom would make a spaghetti and like we'd have spaghetti like once every 2 months. But he loved pasta. Like anytime I'd ask him, what do you want to eat tonight? Pasta. So I eat pasta every day now. So I would say, I guess that's my favorite thing to eat is pasta.
So what would you recommend if someone, like what sort of recipe to start with? Like if someone wanted to start like from your recipe book, is there something that you can go, yep, this recipe, this is what you should start with, and then get them sucked into the
like in general or with the ebook?
Well, I mean, even better with your ebook, but in general as well, if you
So in general, especially like when I'll you know, work with a client that's just like, I have no inspiration. I don't know what to make. So we usually do like a 90-minute shopping session together where it's just like learning about the ingredients, because I feel like once you understand a little bit more what's in season, it makes it a lot more easy to become inspired by things. Secondly, I always ask people, well, what flavors do you gravitate to? So if you were to say, oh, I'm going to order something, you know, with Uber Eats, or I want to go out to a restaurant and eat, like, what is there a type of cuisine? Is there a flavor profile that you gravitate to naturally? So if there is, then that's a great place to start, because it's something that you're familiar with and you know you like already, right? So it's like, it's a lot easier to kind of gauge, like, do I have enough spice? Is it too salty? Like, you have a reference point to work with. And so I'll often recommend that people start with that type of cuisine, and then we elaborate outwards that way. With regards to my ebook, I purposely chose recipes that are pretty simple. The only one that requires like a little bit more time or love involved is the osobuco. But really, it's just about prep work. Everything else comes together within a few minutes and is super simple, including even the recipes that I've posted. Fortunately, I think all of the recipes for the sweets are not vegan, though.
I'm so used to.
Okay.
I'm vegan.
You're like, I'll swap it out with some cashew milk.
The osobuco, I'm not so sure, but everything else is I'm pretty habituated to switch. But most of my cookbooks are not vegan. Most of the chefs that I obsess over are not vegan. I just switch stuff out, but that's part of the fun for me. It's like, how can I make this as close to what they were going for as possible? It's just hard when I've been a vegan since how long? Like 13 years. But still I've been vegetarian since I was 18 and I'm 53. So like how I just asked you, can you describe this cheese to me? I'm realizing more and more there's just stuff I've never tasted, and I'll feed it to somebody and be like, is this what millefeuille tastes like? Is this what this is supposed to taste like? Like, can someone tell me, is this what cannoli, like, is that the right cream? Is it weird? And when people are like, no, it's good, I'm like, no, I need to know, like, what's different about what I just made?
Yes, then, like, the texture, you know, is it?
I'm realizing I don't know. I haven't tasted the original of this thing before in my life, which is really strange.
Oh, I need to know. Have you made vegan cannoli?
I have.
Mm.
I have. I made my own like ricotta, but like with a cashew base. Yeah. And I did it once with macadamia also. But yum. Yeah.
Okay, so that's my special request when you come visit me. We're going to do some cannoli.
Oh, okay. All right. Sounds good to me. So where's the best place for people to... Oh, wait, one more question. Are you specifically doing the cooking in Italy only? Or I don't want to say only because that's huge, or are you still also coaching people like virtually and stuff like that? If somebody is interested in connecting with you, is that still an option for them?
I do still take clients. Fewer just because there is the time difference. And so I'm trying to be selective with people, that like we can and committed to working together. Because with the time difference, it gets really easy of like, oh, well, it doesn't work out for today, let's postpone to next week. So people who are really committed, who want to elevate their cooking, want to make cooking fun, if you want to include kids and all of that, I'm totally down for that as well. So we do a Zoom call and we cook together through Zoom. I've kind of perfected this with the 3 years of COVID, doing that exclusively online for quite some time. So I send over some options for recipes. You choose out your recipes. I send over a shopping list so that you can, you know, have everything on hand. And I'm very relaxed when it comes to if you don't have a certain ingredient. Like, I always have 5 or 6, you know, swap up options, you know, what you can use instead. So as long as you have a pantry that's like somewhat like, you know, certain spices and like the bases, don't stress about that. So yeah, if people are interested in that. And then obviously, if you want to come visit me in Sicily, I'd love to work with people in person.
Nice. In the show notes, I'll put links to everything, including your website and your book and everything. But what's the best way for people to connect with you if they have questions or they want to get in touch with you?
So the forum, so there's like a little chat forum on my website. That's, I get the messages instantaneously. So that's great. Otherwise on Instagram, I'm constantly posting, you know, tips and tricks and content, you know, now a little bit more related to Italy, but food related. So if people have questions, they can reach me on Instagram as well. But surefire way to the website.
If you want to see some beautiful sunsets, go follow Priscilla on Instagram.
So I fell in love with the sunsets here and I started posting randomly once in a while. And then some of my followers were like, hey, we haven't seen a sunset in a little while. Like, can you send a sunset over? And so it became this thing where it's like, and like this week I haven't posted any. So I'm kind of due actually.
Thank you so very much, Priscilla. Was there anything else you wanted to plug or tell people about that's going on in case that you're not already so busy?
I just wanted to thank you guys for the chat. You're amazing women and had a great chat and so easy to talk to. So keep it up.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much. And really so inspiring. So the whole thing, the whole journey, the whole thing, just really, really incredibly inspiring. And when you moved to Italy and then you were like, I'm going to explain to you why in a bit, I'm not ready. I was like waiting. Like, did she do it yet? Did she do it yet? And then you're like, part one. I'm like, oh, for God.
Waiting.
Part
Jen's
two.
Like, please tell me how I do it.
Like, fine, just get her on the podcast. We're going to find out what happened.
Yeah, part three has been like in draft mode for like 6 months. And I decided to launch the ebook because I was just like, I want to share Sicily with as many people as possible. But yeah, it's leaving the draft very, very shortly, part three. So we're going to get to how I did it.
Well, congratulations. And thank you so much for being such an inspiration and also for taking time out. I know it was a bit tricky with the time difference and stuff. So much, yes, much, much appreciated. Nice to meet you.
My pleasure. Thank you. Yeah, nice to meet you.
Bye, Priscilla. Thank you. Talk soon. See you soon.
We'll see you soon.
Yes, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Bye.
A little different than all the rest. I quite old fashioned, wear a hat, sometimes play chess. And when I'm out, I'm looking for that vintage.
Thank you all so much for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps us out. It makes us more visible to other people who don't know that we're out there, and it makes our community that much bigger, which is great. If you would like more detailed show notes, you can go to our website, wecrazycreative.com. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, which would be super fun and cool, you can go to anchor.fm/wecrazycreative. We'd love to hear from you. And maybe we'll even play your message on one of our upcoming episodes. Speaking of hearing from you, you can also follow us on Instagram at We're Crazy Creative Podcast. You can find me on Instagram at Jennifer June Chapman and on my website, jenniferjunechapman.com. For all things vegan, I'm on Instagram @sweetvegan_ and on the World Wide Web at sweetvegan.net. How about you, Megan?
You can find me on Instagram at author.m.redmile or on Facebook, author Megan Redmile. And you can visit my website at meganredmile.com. And you can also find my books on Amazon.